This is Bounded Top Atari 8-Bit Podcast.
On this special interview episode of Antic, the Atari 8-Bit Podcast, I interview Diane Gaw. She was production editor and then managing editor at Analog Magazine. The interview was conducted December 16th, 2014, over Skype. Special thanks to Ken Gagne for getting Diane and me connected. Ken is the publisher of Juiced.gs, which is a fantastic magazine about the Apple II, which is, well, the only magazine left about the Apple II. If you are at all interested in Apple stuff, you should subscribe. Diane and I talk about Ken briefly at the end of the interview, and we start talking about someone named Ken. Well, that's him. All right, here we go.
So how are you?
I'm fantastic.
Nice.
No complaints at all.
Being in Oregon is good for you.
Yes. Yeah. Where are you based?
I'm in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Okay. So that's where you've been since...
Ever.
The analog days, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've had a lot of jobs in Cambridge and Boston and Hartford, Northeast Utilities, and then I was with WPI, which was, oh my God, great fun. If you ever get a chance to see solatriumhouse.org, it was our entry in the first solar decathlon held in China.
Wow.
And I was in charge of making everything happen in English and Mandarin.
Wow. And when was this built?
This was 2013. You build them here, take them there, set them up, get judged in categories, including communications. So it was really cool. And awesome. I had done one for Boston Architectural College before that, so I knew what it was about, and no one else at WPI did.
What is WPI?
Worcester Polytechnic Institute. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I had to write it like for the team's point of view, and it included three universities, and for the WPI point of view, because I was working at WPI marketing at that point. So it was a challenge and fun. Working with students is always great.
Yeah. So are you doing that still now with WPI?
No, now I'm actually doing grant writing and communications for a university foundation in Pennsylvania. So now I go down there like once a month for a week, live in an Amish farmhouse, work with the people down there, and then come back home and sort of play work.
Awesome.
I don't know about you, but for me, this kind of work is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's why you're doing it, right?
That's right. It's true. Okay, well, we're going to talk about fun work that happened 30 years ago.
Forever ago. I couldn't believe that email, and I was like, oh my God, that's four lifetimes back.
Yeah, we live many lifetimes, I guess. And so, yeah, we're going about three lives back. You were managing editor of Analog Magazine. It said here on LinkedIn from April 1984 through October 1987 or so, so almost 4 years.
Yep.
And
I had been there as production editor before that.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. I didn't become managing editor till John Bell and Tom moved back to Missouri.
Okay. So you had said in an email to me, you said, You're not a true Atari fan. You were never a true Atari fan, but your background is in publishing, and that's how you ended up there. So how did you get started at Analog, first day?
Okay. Well, they were a client of the composition house that I was running. And they brought...
And the composition house does magazine layout?
Typesetting, layout, paste. Back then, it was paste up, you know, and taking everything to the camera, to the boards, to the printer.
Okay.
So... We did it when they started getting to look professional. And I loved editing their work. That's one of my background. Well, my degree is in communications. So I had copy and proof, interviewing, journalism, article writing, graphic design, the whole deal. I went to Simmons, so I got an education in how to actually do something, which was nice. So they were clients, and I was supposed to become a partner with the two guys who had started the composition house. And somehow that didn't happen. And when Mike and Lee said, we really want you to come here, I can't remember who said we want to do it together first, whether it was something I said or something they said, but it was one of those happenstances where they said, yeah, we're willing to get, however, I think it was like $45,000 worth of equipment and set it up so that we can do the production in-house mm-hmm. and have control of it. Mm-hmm. So I came and we picked equipment and we set it up and bam, it was great. Because
at that point, when you came to do that, were you hired as an employee at that point, or were you still working? Oh, I see. Okay.
I was hired as an employee when I came to them. Yep. And I was production editor, as I say. I set up all the production stuff with the pay stuff, and eventually we got more people in because there was just more and more to write about, as you know from mm-hmm. back then, and more to do. So we did it.
Okay. Awesome. All right. So you said you started off as production editor and then you became managing editor mm-hmm. eventually?
Eventually. When John Bell left. Mm-hmm. He was after Brian, who went to do interactive games. And he's actually now, I don't know what kind of professor he is, but he teaches gaming and artificial intelligence courses. He consults for Worcester Polytechnic Institute,
okay.
which is kind of second in line to MIT here in Massachusetts. So it's a good school, and it has a lot of hands-on things, and he's one of them. But John Bell was more of an art background with an interest in the model making, and he and Tom Hudson had been friends pretty much forever, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So when they left, they decided to go back to Missouri together. I said, I can do this, because it involved basically organizing. Lee and Mike were the publishers, so they decided what was going to happen and who they were going to let write for us and who not, and who they were going to ask. And I was in charge of making sure that everybody had it there when they were supposed to, that they wrote in our style, that it was actually interesting by looking at letters that people sent in afterwards, because you always heard from that audience. It was great that you always knew what they were thinking. And when I heard the word antic, I was like, yeah, that was always who we were trying to get the news in last and after theirs, so that we'd be the latest with everything. And that was hard back then because there was a 3-month lead time.
Wow. So you're writing the Christmas episode, issue in September,
yeah, the issue,
for instance.
Yeah.
Right.
Before the snow has even thought about falling.
Wow. So was there a real rivalry between the two magazines?
Yeah, there was. There actually was. We were the only...
Was it all in your mind, or did you ever actually interact with them?
I didn't interact with them. I think the guys did. Mm-hmm. This is basically Wendy and all the Lost Boys is how it felt a lot of times, because it was me and the 7 guys, you know, whoever was there at the time. They did more of the interactions with the fellows from Antic, but yes, indeed, it was definitely on our minds because Antic was supported by Atari. We were not. Frequently, we would notice that their advertising might be reflected in their reviews, and we were definitely not going to do that. So we were very careful to be sure that we said what we thought. We didn't depend on the advertising dollars to make up our minds. And when I say our, you can see that's how it felt. It was right. A family. It was a team. Right.
I'm not one to start an argument in an interview, but I have interviewed Jim Caporel of Antic,
sure.
I think that he would disagree that they were supported by Atari.
Really? Okay, but, that may be a mistake, a misconception on my part. Nope. Our understanding was that they had more backing from Atari.
I mean, maybe Atari advertised in that one.
It may have just been location, Kevin.
Right.
You know, but that's how it goes anyway.
Right. That's your perception, and that's fine. I mean,
it was fun to have that as a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Cool. I like a challenge.
All right. So tell me something about some of the other challenges there when you were dealing with writers and programmers and deadlines and things. Is any particular stories that jump out at you as something interesting?
Writers, the fellows we had on staff, Tom, Clay, Doug, they were excellent writers. And, Clayton Walnum, I hardly mm-hmm. had to edit him or Tom Hudson at all. Their English was so good. It was more a matter of making sure everything fit and cutting it so that I left them their voices. I didn't like to change the personality of a writer because, let's face it, Atari was all about personality and the games and the instruction, the programming. I just wanted to be sure it was correct and mm-hmm. them. But the worst problem I ever had was with an artist, not a writer, who actually told me about 3 days before things had to go to the printer that he wasn't going to have the cover ready for us. And it was interesting because I said, okay, that's the last cover you'll do. And we went off and we had a few things in abeyance. And one of the fellows had done some beautiful artwork of a spaceship crashing down into the ocean with, I think it was an old masted schooner type of ship. And he was in the UK, so I had to hurry up and scurry and get him to, you know, give his okay for the copyright so we could use that artwork and get the magazine out on time. And it actually went together pretty well. But the writers came from all over the world. We had submissions from everyone, and they were from people who couldn't speak English because we had a lot of people in South America following it, Germany. So I was glad that I had languages as a minor, and I could at least write back and say thank you, but we're not going to use that right now. That's it for that.
Okay. Let's see. And then I'm just going through the list of things you have done. I'm sure something will trigger a memory or a story. It says you develop monthly themes. Yep. So, I mean, it's like this is going to be the games issue. This is going to be all about printers. I mean, that sort of thing.
Editorial calendar, sure. And then when MIDI came along, there'd be a month for MIDI. Because we were lucky enough to have Charles Icarus Johnson, who is still online in many places, but has changed viewpoints a lot. But he was with Traffic, Chicago, I'm sorry. And he was a very good writer, a very good musician, and as it turned out, a very good programmer as well. So, yeah, we would have the editorial calendar would be about games, MIDI, different things you could do, marketplace, all kinds of, every magazine has an editorial calendar. The hard part is making sure you have everything you need for every single one, as you probably are well aware.
Yes. I'm aware of how magazines work. Many of my listeners may not be, so it's fine too.
Well, you organize it around a theme so that you give people something to... Right. To think about, and if they're going to submit something, they do. If they're not, then they're at least interested in what may be coming up.
Do you did you deal with advertising at all?
Oh yeah. I didn't sell it, but I was responsible for getting in the artwork and making sure that people met the specs and got their things there on time. I did crack quips a lot. I have to say, I do enjoy getting things done on a schedule, and my modus operandi is just to start in and set it up so that it gets a flow. And we had a pretty good flow after a year or so.
Good. So were you there for... Okay, I got to ask about this. It says you you analyze costs and cut spending. Were the seven boys spending money like crazy?
It wasn't that. It was that I think there was a lot of naivete about what was available in the printing world, and the printing world was changing fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you know, it went from hot type to photo type to, oh gosh, desktop publishing in a matter of 10 years, really. All right, 20 maybe. But it was very fast. And there were cost-cutting measures. One of the things was just at the point where we were looking for a new printer, we had a problem with a print company because they weren't doing well. So we were doing that kind of thing. We were checking on how much does insurance cost. You know, we were learning the business of working as a team in many ways. I still sort of feel like the grown-up because Mike and Lee were the real creatives there, I think, and Tom and Clay, and, you know, I just made it possible.
Right.
And the other thing that I helped a lot with was the Atari fair that we had. It probably was the only Atari fair in the Northeast. It was the first one.
That's the next thing I was going to ask about.
Oh, okay.
The Atari show at Worcester Centrum. Is that the location?
Can say Worcester, can they?
Worcester. No, not unless
really
you're from Massachusetts.
It's easier than you think.
That's right. You said Oregon, and I didn't say a word about that. That's not how you say it.
Oregon?
Oregon.
Oregon. Well, I had an uncle who moved there, so, you know, had a nice house on a cliff overlooking the sea.
I wasn't going to call you on Oregon, but you called me out on Worcester. So.
No, it's just so funny because, you know, it's in Worcestershire sauce, and you think that people, but they say it and spell it so many ways. Oregon, at least they say, you know, two ways and spell it
right.
One.
So tell me about the Atari show at the Centrum.
Well, that was a joint effort with Boston Computer Society, which vanished not long after that because the world was, again, changing so much. But we met with them and we realized that they didn't have an organization that could do something that big. So we kind of took over, and it was a blast also. We ended up with 4,000 people. We ended up with Bill Gates as one of our 200 vendors, and the vendors were very happy with the show. And it was held at the Worcester Centrum, which is still there. It's the DCU Centrum now because everybody has to be bought, but it was a whole weekend long, and we had many of our writers came in, and for a lot of them, it was the first time I had met them because they might not have been able to be at CES the one time I went to it. But it was a great success.
So what year was this?
That was October of 1987. And the day after that was the day I wasn't at Analog anymore.
Okay, we'll get to that in a minute.
That was Black Tuesday.
Okay.
That was that day that the stock markets crashed like mad that weekend. Hmm. They fell that Monday afterwards.
Wow. All right, so this was the show was on that day or the day
you got laid
off?
The show was on the weekend just before it.
Just before. Okay. So it was Analog had a booth at the show as well as
Analog
putting on the
show, was the sponsor. We didn't really have a booth. Yeah. We were everywhere.
Hmm.
And the Boston Computer Society members would come in or be gone, but we were really the organizers of it when it finally came down to it because Cherry Valley, where Analog was published, is about 6 miles out of Worcester in a lovely little place. Doesn't it sound like Happy Valley?
It does. Sounds lovely.
It's kind of
Cherry
like
Valley.
That.
Well named, then.
It is well named, but it was great because we got to take everybody around and we got to meet the people who were doing things. As I mentioned to you, Bill Gates was trying to get everybody to buy Word because I don't know if you remember then, but WordPerfect, Xyrite, there were a bunch of others that were in competition and everybody was kind of, well, how can Windows do, you know? How can Microsoft do?
They had nothing to worry about.
Yeah, really.
Xyrite had nothing to worry about.
Don't laugh. I used that
WordStar.
For a newspaper for years.
So you put on the show. It sounds like it was a success.
It was.
How did you go from that until being jobless the next day?
Well, I did not realize that Mike and Lee were planning to sell the magazines. And I had gotten in, you know, a secondary editor, and we had a business consultant there while we were developing the show who never saw me work. So he didn't really think I was cost effective. And it was a natural parting of the ways at that point, really, because the magazine was sold to Larry Flint like 3 months later. I got to say, that was going out with a bang.
Thank you for the great show. Now you're
you're
done. Oh, were you disappointed? Were you surprised or did it make sense at the time?
Yes, absolutely. But then my brother gave me my own computer, which I had never had till then.
Really?
Because a typesetting computer, I used to do whole newspaper pages by math. You couldn't see what you were looking at to come out. And he gave me my first computer, and I started writing for a living.
What kind of computer was that that your brother gave you?
Oh, dear God. Little. Bad. It was an early PC, and it didn't do a lot, but it did do word processing, and I did financial aid newsletters and newsletters for organizations in town. And then I had my own desktop publishing business for 13 years with Macs and PCs.
Okay.
It started with PageMaker. Do you remember PageMaker? It was
absolutely
the first one that was on a PC, so I had to have that. And I had Macs and PCs because you never knew what your clients wanted.
You said you went to CES as well?
Once with the guys.
And that was for a booth, I assume, an analog booth?
We had a booth, We had a booth at CES and Comdex, I believe, we also did.
All right. So any interesting stories about that? Slipping things to Vegas?
Or? You know, no matter how many times people say it, it's really not a vacation. I did have a wonderful time. I enjoyed Vegas. My feet were tired, but I have to say, the guys were wonderful. In the middle of the night, they said, well, you've never been to the West Coast. Let's at least go to the Hoover Dam. Mm-hmm. So they took me in the middle of the night out in that beautiful desert. And I realized that it was the better part of valor to stay in the car because I had sandals. You don't walk in the desert at night in sandals.
Right. Snakes and things.
It was gorgeous. And we drove halfway into California to get Thai, so I could at least say I'd been in California. But it was wonderful seeing the displays, seeing what was coming. It was always exciting to see what was new and what was happening, and to hear the people who knew about it really talk about it because they're enthusiastic. I like that.
Nice. Hoover Dam, and you said in your email, you said once your printer went belly up.
Oh, that was the print company. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They called us, and we could tell they weren't doing well because they wanted us to pay for the paper in advance.
That's
now,
not good.
Now, for 107,000 issues of 128 pages, that's a lot of money. And we realized something was wrong because a print company shouldn't have that happen. And we just said, no, because who knew if we got them the paper, if they'd be able to pay their people, if they'd still be. So that was panic time. And that was before desktop publishing. So you couldn't just output another copy. You had to go to a place where you had your photographs processed and get your negatives back and paste everything back together and get it ready. And we did it in 3 days. And I think I told you, we ended up taking it to the airport to Logan at 3 a.m. because we found a new printer in the Midwest and had to get it on that plane or it wouldn't make the deadline. It was amazing.
Wow. Wow.
That was exciting, by the way.
Tell me a little bit. You said you got feedback from readers and they were very vocal. And I mean, as a reader, the magazines were, until BBSs came along, I mean, they were the only connection to
they were just starting, the
greater community. So, I mean, can you tell me more about your dealings with readers, letters, anybody show up and go, hey, you know, I don't know.
I'm trying to remember any of those, Kevin. Honestly, most of the time, people just sort of, you know, I'm not worthy because they were learning from Tom and Clay and Doug and Brad and all of them. Mm-hmm. Maurice did animation, things like that. Most of the time, the readers were just trying to find out what more they could learn, and they wanted an association with the writers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember. There were some whose manuscripts showed up every month, and they just, not English speak, could well. So you couldn't take what they had written. And there were probably some who were angry, but mostly I ignored that and just went forward because that's the only direction there is.
Right. So you were there for the edition of ST Log magazine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
My podcast is about all about the 8-bit, and those ST people can start their own podcast if they want.
That was kind of how it happened, too.
Yeah.
It was 24 hours to create a logo.
Really? 24 hours? Because the ST was announced, or what? Tell me the story.
Well, the ST came out, or was coming out. We didn't even have a real one when we started that issue.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to mock one up. And believe me when I tell you that Tom Hudson and John Bell were excellent at building models, and so is Mike Duchesne. And they would go into the dark room, and I never knew what they were coming out with. It might be a circuit board. It might be an X-Wing fighter. Well, no, that wasn't then, but you never could tell. And they did. They mocked up an ST, and I looked at it and said, okay, let's slant it, because there's all those slants and the... And made up a logo and colored it. We got some metallic template to cover it with so it looked shiny. Oh gosh, it was fast.
Yeah, wow.
But the 400, 800 were the backbone. They really were, because sadly, all people thought about was games. One of the reasons I was so enamored of the magazines and the guys was that they were actually doing something creative. And I don't know about you, but it's like my mother couldn't believe that we'd go to the moon. I couldn't believe we wouldn't. Hmm. So it's that, what's ahead? What's coming? And these were the people who could make it happen. I was fascinated by that. I still am. They were going into the future, sort of headlong and rolling over, but they were going, you know, somersaulting.
Do you have any artifacts from back in the day?
Artifacts?
Artifacts. Any, I don't know, posters or software or...
I don't have
and
software.
Just anything. Yeah.
I have, you know, things in a book of... Well, I have some of the magazines left, and I have, you know, the one they did that was a special, crunch. I have things I did, like, I'll bet you didn't know there were analog note cards.
Note cards.
Yeah, we had beautiful blue note cards embossed with the analog A so that we could write to people when we felt like it. And I tried to make us, in, you know, as businesslike as we could be. We had business cards and note cards and stationery. I don't have a lot of, there were no trinkets, really. We didn't do trinket tchotchkes. No.
Right.
The guys had the models, and I had a photo typesetter.
You had all the toys you needed.
That was all the toys I did need, yes. I've always been fascinated by how well I can make the printed word appear, whether it's on a screen or a magazine page. Just works for me. I bet you don't kern your numbers, huh?
I don't. Nope. Yeah. I appreciate good kerning, but I'm too lazy to do it myself.
Yeah, I can't help myself. I'm one of those people who, instead of OCD, I should be CDO, so it's in alphabetic order. Yeah.
Right. Nice. So if you could send a message to the Atari community and the analog readership, and you can right now, what would you tell them?
What would that message be? Keep looking forward, and don't ever underestimate what you can do, because there's more you can do than you know of. Even if it's not kill Mike Deschanes when Pat Kelly sends him in to startle you for the fourth time. Pat Kelly kept coming in and making me jump.
Uh-huh.
And I finally said to him, look, you know, in that best I'm going to kill you soon face, if you don't stop, I am going to kill you. And so he went away. And about 5 minutes later, somebody came in and made this noise. And I went right up out of my chair and had my hands around Mike Deschanes' neck because Patrick had sent him in. So the other thing to Atari people is never, ever lose your sense of humor. You guys have always had it in spades. Keep it.
Thank you. All right. What haven't I asked you? What thing happened? What story is there? Or what thing should I know that I have not asked you yet?
That's always one of the best questions in the entire world, isn't it? I don't know, but I do know that working with these people gave me an entree into the computer world, which I might never have had. Yes, I was working on a computer doing typesetting and doing page setup and all that, but they made me not afraid of learning, you know, okay, what's a floppy disk? Okay, what's a CD? Okay, what's of taking things apart and putting them together. I set up an office with two PCs and three Macs, three PCs and three Macs, and all the furniture, because I learned from them that I could, you know, actually just put one foot in front of the other and do it. I'm trying to think now. I've it's funny because I've put that in the background for so long, because nobody cares about it on your resume when it's that long ago. But they made me unafraid to go to the web, remembering Charlie Bachon and his BBS. And how much time they spent and how much heart they put into it. They were constant. Oh, I never learned to shoot an elastic until I worked at Analog.
You mean like fire a rubber band?
Yeah, like
person?
Fire. There was always something going on. It might be going to the movies together or going to see a band, Tangerine Dream, Clay Walnum was a musician who made everything magic. So he was the one who brought Charles Johnson on board, and we all went to see Al Jarreau when Charles was touring with him at one point. It was always an adventure. Sometimes I'd forget to come home, and my roommate would call up and say, is it because I made chicken? No, it's because I'm having fun.
I could hang out with Al Jarreau, or I could eat chicken. I chose Sal.
Well, it wasn't always Al Jarreau. So it was just Tom and John or Doug.
Right. So I know you had the typesetting machine. You said you're not an Atari person, but I mean, when you were there, did anyone ever hand you a joystick and say, "Here, try this"?
No.
No.
Never. Wow. As a matter of fact, I was looking at your things and I found that sample of a 400, was it a 400 personal computer?
Mm-hmm. The Atari 400?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I had never seen that. I did not know. I knew that's what it could do here. I did not know it because I had seen the video or played with, you know, that screen. Mm-hmm. I knew what the guys were doing with it. Huh. But I had to learn an accounting program, a DOS accounting program, when I started my business. And knowing what the Ataris looked at as I walked by everything that was going on was what made me able to just say, oh, sure, I can do that. Because it was all logical. It all made sense.
Sounds like you had seen it and you had read about it a ton. You just hadn't actually used it.
And I was intuitive about how it would work enough that I could say, did you really mean it this way? And they'd say, oh, good catch. Or, no, get out. You know, one or the other. It was an interesting back door to computing for me. I don't think most Atari people would say that, but I don't think most Atari people were already working on the kind of equipment I was.
Right.
And Mike, oh, have you ever met anyone who could actually drum their toes?
No, I mean like you can with your fingers?
Yeah, like blip, blip, no. Blip. He would stand in back of me and beside me, and I would know he was there because he would keep drumming his toes inside his shoe.
That's weird.
He's a very funny guy. He's not just because he can drum his toes, but his sense of humor is so dry and so wonderful. I think that he and Lee just brought together a great bunch of people who really wanted to explore a new frontier. And that's exactly what they did. And my former bosses used to kind of make fun of them because they were weird when they'd come into the composition house where I worked. And I felt like they were all my friends because I grew up with engineers and crazy people. So it was like going home for me. It was great to be in the middle of.
Awesome. Thank you very much for your time.
Anything else?
Nice to meet you. I'm glad that Ken could get us hooked together.
Yeah, he's an amazing guy. I really enjoy what he does too.
How do you know him?
We met in a local, Mensa. Mm-hmm. And he does theater. And I did a lot of theater before Analog and after Analog. Analog itself was theater. And Ken and I just clicked, and he's great fun. And he's always four steps ahead of everyone else. So it's wonderful. And to have him be the historian for the Apple IIs, that's just mind-blowing for me. Because everybody, of course, at Analog thought Apple was a bad word. It's kind of funny. I often get that because I work with graphic artists and I work with people who are writers and programmers and IT. And it's like, no, people, they're tools.
Right.
Don't invest them with something they aren't.
But at the time, there was a real... you had to be. You had your camp, and that was it. I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, people still do that all the time. There aren't a lot of them people who just say, "Sure, whatever you put in front of me, I'll use it."
No. That's true.
But maybe that's part of being where I was too. I knew I could use whatever you gave me, so I did.
Awesome. All right. Thanks.
If I ever think of anything else, I'll let you know, but...
Yeah. Please do. You know where to find me.
All right. Well, maybe we'll see each other again someday.
Great. Thank you, Diane.
Take care, Kevin.
Bye.
Bye-bye.